Welcome, everyone, to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who's out there, you can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. You can also find this show on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. You can also find the other shows we do on Spotify, the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show, Justin the Food Entrepreneurs, The Night Dasher, and the Centurion Leadership Italian Show with Justin Bizarro. So, thank you, everyone, for listening in. I appreciate it. We're trying to grow this show. This is our newer show, but we are giving a space for all the other entrepreneurs out there. And by other, I mean the non-food ones. Food is my where I started. It is the space that I started in. I have diversified quite a bit since then in other entrepreneurial ventures over the last 25, 26 years. But that being said, we had a lot of entrepreneurs wanting to be on the show, on the food show, but not being in food. So we've created a new show around it, so it's pretty cool. And with that being said, I have a special guest. We connected on Threads, by the way. This is cool. I think Threads, the new social media platform, is a perfect setup for this social media entrepreneur and the owner of Razor Sharp Digital out of St. Louis, Missouri. Ivan, how are you doing today, Ivan? You're also from Bulgaria originally, which has a special place in my heart, which we'll talk about also on the show. But how are you today, Ivan?
Hey, Justin, I'm really good, man. I'm excited. I'm grateful for you taking the time to bring me on your show, and I'm looking forward to having an amazing conversation, especially after you said having a special place in your heart for Bulgaria, as you said, being Bulgarian. So thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember some of the words that I learned, and we can talk about as we go through. But I want to get you started and get you moving and start telling your story, because this is your episode. So let's go all the way back to baby Ivan in Bulgaria. Let's talk about your story, who you are, like where you come from, how you came to the United States, and how you became an entrepreneur and starting your own business in Razor Sharp Digital. Because I think there's a lot there. Take as long as you want. Generally, as the audience knows, the more detail you guys go in, the longer the story, the more long-winded, the more golden nuggets that can be turned into diamonds, as we say, can come out of these episodes. So let's hear, and the microphone's yours, Ivan.
Oh, wow. Thank you once again for this opportunity, and you're actually probably one of the few people, I should say, that has ever asked for going back to baby Ivan story, because well, for one, this will be a book one day because there's just so much in my story. But let's start. So I was born in a small town called Ruse in Bulgaria, which is on the Danube River, borderlining Romania. And I was born in 1980. And I was born to a family. So my father and my mom, who have been married for over 40 years at this point. Very, very unconventional for a modern day and age. But I think I've been very fortunate to have parents who have sort of paved the way from a very early age and showing, you know, loyalty from a relationship standpoint. We were, I would say, probably borderline poor. Growing up, we didn't have much. At a younger age, in fact, for a few years after I was born, we used to live with my grandfather, God bless him, and my grandmother at the time, simply because my parents were trying to get on their feet. Both of my parents, ironically enough, actually served in the army at a very young age, simply because it was mandatory. It wasn't optional, like in the United States. So that, I think, really gave them the opportunity to learn a lot about life, what's important, and really be able to forge a strong foundation. Growing up, like I said, we didn't have much. You know, my parents owned a Warburg. That was the name of the car. That's an old German car that topped out at 60 kilometers. So if you can imagine for a second, my summers were spent with no air conditioning. There was no such thing. No indoor climate control. There was no such thing. And I remember vividly quite a few summers growing up, we would drive to Varna, which is on the Black Sea, to vacation. And we would drive in this Varburg that would top out at 60 kilometers with no AC and the windows rolled down with no child seats either. I have an younger sibling, a sister who is 3 years younger than me and also lives here in the United States now, which we'll get to in just a little bit. But the Bulgaria days were interesting. My father was a musician. He played the trombone in a classic music orchestra. I remember when I was younger, I used to visit the opera and watch him play. And my father used to travel a lot all over Eastern Europe. It was part of the gig since they played in an orchestra. So it was pretty cool because, for instance, when he went to Italy, he brought me this gondola lamp. It was a really cool gondola lamp. I still remember it to this day. And it was his way of sort of showing that, you know, he always thought of me as special. He always wanted to bring something unexpected, and especially since he traveled so much. At one point in time, I think it was my father's hope for me to become a musician because I started taking guitar lessons. I started taking accordion lessons. I started taking piano lessons when I was younger, but none of that, unfortunately, stuck. Unfortunately, if there's something that would change, it's probably going to be that. And like I said, we grew up really poor. You know, my parents traveled to Germany, to Romania. They were trying to do some side hustles, like back in the day, selling cigarettes across the board, you know, selling different things to make extra money. My mom was an assistant, so she wasn't really making a lot of money. And my father was a traveling musician with the opera. And to kind of move past that, you know, we kind of lived life sort of on an autopilot, you would say. And I think right around the age of 9, you know, there was sort of this, how to explain it, sort of a very eye-opening experience that I think happened to really change the trajectory of my entire life. So one day my father said, you know, I need to do something different. And that different is going to be immigrate to the United States. He just sort of had this idea, and it was in an effort with the attempt to hopefully strive for building a better life for our family. And so at the age of 9, I had just turned 10 years old. It was on borderline of my 10th birthday. My father left. He left my mom and my sister and me behind. And it was just sort of puzzling. For me, I wondered, why did my dad leave? You know, I was 10 years old. You know, I couldn't really make sense of it, let alone my sister, who was 7 years old at the time. She couldn't really understand what was going on. And so my father took the $400 that he had saved, $400 US, and bought a plane ticket and flew out to New York. And from there, met up with some Bulgarians and ended up in St. Louis. Now, the next 3 years of my life from 10 to 13 were challenging, interesting. So what happened in these 3 years, I think, was instrumental to what happened after that, which I'll get to in just a second. And so we ended up immigrating to the Czech Republic in a city called Ústí nad Labem, which is about 4 hours outside of Prague, in a former refugee camp. So this was when Germany had invaded Czechoslovakia, which is no longer called that. It's the Czech Republic and the Slovak Republic. But at the time, it was Czechoslovakia. Then they had a lot of refugee camps. So, you know, my mom, my sister, me. We immigrated to a refugee camp, and to this day, I still, there's nights where I attempt to process what had happened during that time, and that was it was about 3 years that we spent, you know, in this refugee camp. So it was quite a bit of time. And I apologize. I think it was about 2 years that we spent in that camp. And, you know, this was basically an old camp for soldiers is what it was. And that turned it into a refugee camp for people who had no asylum, basically.
This is crazy to me. So Germany invaded the what was Czechoslovakia, like as the Iron Curtain came down, because, or around that time, because you're the same age as me. I was born December 20th, 1979. You're roughly around the same age as me. And this is just crazy history to me, because we always think of Germany as this peaceful country after World War II and how much they changed. But the truth is, that's not the truth. And so, like, historically, they have not, for any other reason, but I just want everyone to hear that we have this idea that Europe was not in war, but then we saw all these Eastern European countries and some Western European countries go to war during the 1990s, the late 80s, 1990s, throughout 2000s. So anyway, go ahead. I didn't want to deviate from the story, but I just wanted to clarify that. So you're in this concentration camp or old, basically military camp for 2 years plus.
Yeah. And ironically enough, December 20th is actually my father's birthday.
And it's my father's birthday also. I was born on the same day as him.
Oh, wow. Okay, this is getting interesting. So, we were in this concentration camp, and, you know, there's so many bits and pieces of this that I remember. I mean, I was envisioning what soldiers were going through. I mean, just looking at the structure, the architecture. I mean, there were skeletons that were drawn on the walls. I mean, we lived in a single room that was just had a door with a hallway. I mean, it was a concentration camp, and I had never experienced anything like that, obviously. So you can imagine at the age of 10, it was frightening. It was curious. It was, I don't even know if I had choice of words. And so for about 2 years' time, it was just a time blur. I had so many questions. Every Sunday, me and my father would talk via a rotary phone. This was prior to the smartphone. So this was 1990, right around the time that you described. And, you know, it was, there were times, you know, I was confused. There were times where I cried, you know, there were times where, you know, all I wanted was basically just to see him.
Just as a reference for everyone, like near Munich, like I would say Munich's pretty close, but it's not a far drive from Berlin either. Like what was Czechoslovakia, what was part of Czechoslovakia, now the Czech Republic, is literally right on the border of Germany in the southeast corner, I would say southeast-ish corner of Germany. So it's really close to Germany. And the Danube River goes actually from Germany, I believe, or throughout Europe, all the way to Bulgaria, if I'm not mistaken, just to give that reference as well. So anyway, and your father's in America at this time, correct? And you guys are in this, what I would call a camp or refugee camp.
Yes, yes. So my father, just to flip the story, so throughout these 3 years, my father was working 3 full-time jobs, I shit you not, and the only thing he had on his mind is to bring his family here, which, of course, at the age of 10, I couldn't even fathom that, because even though every Sunday we would talk via phone for an hour, via rotary phone, you know, he would keep saying, you know, the time will come, the time will come, you know, I'm working through it. You know, I know it's hard for you guys to understand. So it was really nerve wracking, and it was disappointing at times, because it almost seemed like there was indefinite, that whether or not we would ever come to the United States was just a giant hope, really. And so 2 years passed by, and at the time, in our third year, while we were living in Ustinad Labem, or just outside of Ustinov-Labem, which is where the concentration camp was. My mom actually formed a powerful relationship that still stands to this day with a lady who just had a really big heart. She was divorced, had two sons, and just had a really big heart. So anyway, she invited us in this amazing home that she had. I mean, it was amazing. Just the 13th century. It was remodeled, but it was too big for them. And so we moved in for them with them for 1 year. She had invited us to live with her because she wanted us to move away from the concentration camp. So we moved in with her. And of course, that was an enlightenment for me. But I still was talking to my father every Sunday via rotary phone for an hour. Now, towards the end of 1993, it was December, I believe it was December 1st of 1993, in our Sunday call with my father, he said, "We're all coming back to Bulgaria." And I was like, "What do you mean we're coming back to Bulgaria?" And he said, "We're all coming back to Bulgaria, including me, because we're initiating the immigration process." So I couldn't even understand what the hell that meant. So in that month, we flew back to Bulgaria. He flew from the U.S. to Bulgaria. We were in Sofia. And we initiated the immigration process, which included our passports, fingerprint, and everything. And January 16th, 1994, I found myself, I still remember this day, it was cold, it was snowy, the weather was terrible, and I found myself at the airport, Lambert International in St. Louis, Missouri, after having flown for what it seemed like 18 hours. All together. And I was even more confused. I mean, I was excited. You know, I got to see my father. You know, we were moving to this new place, you know, but I still had a lot of questions. I absolutely had no idea what was going on. I didn't know any English. I think the only thing that I knew in English was hello and hi. That was it. And I was extremely puzzled, but I was absolutely ecstatic to see my father for the first time in 3 years. So obviously that lasted for a while because, you know, as a kid and not having seen your father for 3 years, that leaves a lasting impression on you. And from there, my life in the United States started. You know, we went through fingerprints and passports and all of that. And, you know, we were naturalized citizens. We weren't citizens of the United States. We were naturalized citizens. My father was given a 10-year visa at that time also, which actually did happen, but it didn't happen. I'll get to that in just a second. So between January and March of 1994, I basically had to learn how to speak English, how to start conversations. I started school. At the time, I was being tested academically. Ironically enough, I was placed in seventh grade based on what they thought they knew about my level of education and age. I passed seventh grade in a week because I knew all the material.
Yeah, and this is interestingly, I'm sorry to cut you off. I wanted you to keep going there, but I talked to you about my like best friend growing up. His name was Kirill Apostolov, and it was very similar. I met him in, we were around seventh grade age. He didn't speak English very well, and any English he had learned was from U.S. movies, particularly, weirdly, the house party movies with Kid and Play. So even the English that he was speaking was not the English we were speaking in. And I'll never forget it. Like, the very first day I met him, he was showing off about how he could dunk a basketball because he was, like, 6 foot when all the rest of us were, like, 5 foot at the age of 13. It was crazy how tall he was. But he broke his knee literally the first day I met him. And then the only thing we could understand coming out of his mouth other than Bulgarian was his call for his mom. And he ended up recovering from the knee injury and becoming a great basketball and soccer player after he, like, broke his knee literally. But that was the very first he even had a Kid and Play haircut. going on, because that was his first influence to the Western world and watching those movies and how he learned English. But he was in a very similar situation to us in class. And even in seventh grade, he had to teach himself English. He had to teach himself to read. He had to figure out how to get by in school when all the rest of us were, even if most of us were native speakers, I was English, but we had a lot of non-native speakers of English. All of our classes were that way, so he had to learn that way. So I just want to anchor that with the audience. It's weirdly how similar like your stories are about this, and just what it took to have immigrate to a new country and then have a new language, a new culture, a new lifestyle forced upon you. So go ahead. I want to keep you to keep talking about, but I wanted to anchor it also that this is like a crazy hurdle in life to get over, right? Like you don't, like people are speaking to you and it sounds like gibberish.
Yeah, it's there's so much that I can say about learning a different language, and you are alluding to the similarity of my story to your best friend. I think, you know, everything happens for a reason. We meet people in life for a reason. Chain of events happen for a reason. I mean, God has a perfect plan for everybody. And we all question it. We all question it, especially in times of adversity. And this was a difficult time for me because, you know, I missed my friends, you know, at the age actually I had just turned 13. So my birthday is January 20th. 1980. And so January 20th, 1994, I turned 14 years old. And so it was a difficult time because from January to about March, I literally lived and breathed English. That was it. I would go to school. I passed seventh grade in a week academically. There were a lot of kids that were pissed off and couldn't even understand why I even passed seventh grade in a week, which actually I think played in part as to what happened through my high school years, which I'll get to in just a second. But in 3 months, I basically learned how to develop basic conversations enough to maybe go to the grocery store. And ironically enough, at this time, since we're talking a little bit about entrepreneurship, my father actually was an owner of a small pizza joint here in St. Louis, Missouri. So, you know, what happened over the next probably 4 or so years, you know, I got to learn hands-on what it took, you know, hard work, working a small pizza joint, helping after school almost every single day, learning how to make pizzas, even going on deliveries eventually. I'll get to that in just a second, but you know, in 3 months, I learned how to speak English, and most people thought I was crazy. I mean, to the point to where I was speaking English with my parents. I refused to speak Bulgarian, you know, with my parents because it was my attempt to master learning the English. Now, mind you, prior to coming to the United States, I spoke Russian, I spoke Czech, obviously Bulgarian, and now I was learning English, which I can't speak any other language besides a little bit of Bulgarian and English nowadays. Kind of saddening, but there's also a part of that too that I'll share in a little bit. So I learned English. I was going through school. You know, I got to eighth grade, made some friends, and here comes high school. Of course, I had never experienced high school, so I didn't know what to expect. So I entered high school, and the best way I can describe 9th to 12th grade is just that if I could remove it from my life, I probably would, but I can't because it's part of my history, and it's because I was bullied all through high school. In fact, it was probably right around 10th grade that I had borderline suicidal thoughts because, you know, I imagined the kid with long hair and glasses who was extremely intelligent, straight A student. I was an excellent runner. At the age of 18, I was squatting 300 pounds. I was benching 200 pounds when I was 185. And I allowed people and kids around me to push me, to punch me, to call me names, to force me to sit on the back of the bus, to eat lunch by myself all through high school. And I really struggled with self-esteem all through high school. And not because there was something wrong with me. It's because I allowed the external to dictate who I am as a person. And I think that robbed me of my dignity at some point in time. It robbed me of my potential as a human being, and which is why I haven't spoken to a single person that I met in high school to this day, because that really hurt me emotionally. And, you know, are there regrets during that time? Sure. I could have been a great basketball player. I could have been a great track and field runner. I could have been a great wrestler. And I didn't believe in myself. I allowed other people to bully me. When I would go to my guidance counselors, they would just say, that's just kids being kids. My parents didn't understand, as Eastern Europeans, what that really meant or how even to address that. So I had a lot of nights where I was angry at myself. I seeked answers. I didn't find answers. And at one point in time, I just became numb to it. I just thought it was normal, that there was a stage, it was a phase in life. And now if you ask me about bullying nowadays, try bullying my kids and see what happens. Let's just put it that way.
Or me witnessing any bullying in general. Anyone, even a kid, that poor kid, if I witness it, I agree with you on this 100%. And there's not enough parents out there doing enough in this world to stop the bullying and even encouraging their kids to be bullies. But that's a whole other topic, and I've seen too much of it. But anyway, I didn't want to interrupt your story, but you got a friend in me on this one.
Yeah, it's in fact, after, well, 20 plus years of, I would say, being numb, for the first time in that regard, I started joining groups like Facebook groups, and I'm actually looking to get more involved, to do maybe some public speaking also around bullying and anti-bullying and support movements that support that initiative, because there's just not enough that we can do for that. And having
guess what happens, guys? Kid bullies become adult bullies in our societies and in our workplaces and in our companies. And if we don't take care of it as kids or don't stomp them out as adults, all we're doing is creating that type of environment in every culture. Okay, and if enough bullies exist, they eventually rise up against a certain population, regardless of that population hasn't done anything or not. Like, that's just what happens in society. You can go back to the Roman history, you can go back to history of a lot of different empires, and watch what happens when the bullies rise up. So anyway, go ahead, Ivan. I think this is hugely important that you're doing this, so I want to anchor this purpose that you've been given because of such a negative experience. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry about what happened to you, obviously, but I'm also glad God made it part of his plan, because now you get to go fight for the people being bullied. You also get to go fight bullies in a better way. You know? So I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I guess an unblessed situation sometimes is a blessing. And, you know, you never know when you're having a good day. But anyway, go ahead.
It's you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a completely separate conversation, but you're absolutely right. 100% everything that you mentioned regarding bullying. So high school was a blur. I had an ESL teacher, ESL, English as a second language teacher. And I mean, she was about as oblivious to this as they come. She would push off the topic on most times. She would also put blame on me, like I did something wrong. And so it was a very challenging time. In fact, I literally remember, especially after, you know, your first love that you have, which is usually in your high school days, is I literally remember vividly to this day of, like, literally driving in a Geo Metro, which was the vehicle that my parents had at the time. And, you know, like, just driving down the road and just wanting to kill myself. I just, like, I felt like I had reached such a rock bottom between you know, I had just broken up with my first crush, deeply in love, which later I found out that it was mainly cultural. Her parents really didn't want her associating with me because I was an immigrant. I was Bulgarian, which was saddening. And then on top of that, everybody in high school bullied me, and I felt like nobody in society, literally, like if you've ever had the feeling, which I don't even wish on my enemies, honestly, or even my biggest haters, to where you feel like nobody wants you or you don't belong. Like, I don't want anybody to ever have that feeling. That's a terrible feeling to have.
Yes.
As a person.
It's because trying to fit in doesn't work. Belonging and being ourselves and finding our true identity is the only way. Yep. But it took me 43 years to figure that out. 42 years, to be exact. Holy, even with all the success I had in my life. The other thing. Yep. I want to talk about also, for anyone who's out there, because bullying is a big topic. It is something that I'm actively against. And I've experienced a huge ton of it as an adult over the last few years. Like, maybe even over the last decade, the more success I had, weirdly, the more bullies I found. I've even had bullies that were in my company that got paid really well, that were managers and executives, that eventually started taking advantage or becoming entitled. And when it was time to get rid of them or call them out for what was going on, they started this bullying thing even towards me and towards my family, towards Deborah, towards my stepkids, all of that stuff, which is just horrendous. I even had my parents tell me that it wasn't as bad as it was. And instead of actually, even as a kid, when I was a kid and I went through a bullying situation trying to make it in soccer and stuff like that, I went through a brief period of bullying. They were like, well, what did you do? Why are you did something to deserve it. What did you do? And I'm like, are you kidding me? So this is my fault. Okay. Which I get it. In some ways, you want to be able to have self-awareness, but holy crap, talk about no support whatsoever. Even from your own parents, because they just didn't understand what was going on, because for all intents and purposes, I think bullying has gotten worse progressively over time. I mean, it's the worst I've ever seen it now, comparatively, but I just wanted to emphasize that as well, Ivan, for anyone educational-wise or listening in, to extract out of this is, it doesn't matter what your situation is or how cool you think your kid is or how cool you think you are, or how much success you have or how much money, there's always a group out there that will bully you for some reason. Find some reason to rally. That's what I'm saying. You got to be careful of the bullying because it's contagious. It makes people feel cool to put other people down when they can't find the means to rise up themselves. Okay, that's meaning, how do I rise up myself without knocking down other buildings? As the saying would go, there's two ways to be the tallest building. Either knock down all the other buildings or build your own tallest building. Most people will not build their own tallest building. They just want to knock down other people's building, and they rally a group of people who feel that way. Here's the problem, guys, in the audience, is if you do that, eventually bullies turn on each other, and when there's no other buildings to knock down, they start knocking down each other. And that's where shit gets really bad. So anyway, go ahead, Ivan. I just wanted to just anchor that for anyone listening in, like, that, you know, there's two individuals here that can relate to what's going on. If you are being bullied, you can reach out to us. I'm glad to help. I know Ivan is as well. But a lot of the times your parents, your faculty, your mentors, your teachers, your coaches as a kid will not even acknowledge it. And in fact, they make you feel like you're crazy, like you're making it up sometimes. It's so bizarre. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
It's really, you know, you're absolutely right. And that's actually what I was experiencing through high school, is that most times blame was being aimed at me, as in, well, what did you do wrong? And it's like, wait, you didn't even ask what happened, and you immediately assumed that it's my fault. And that's pretty much what happens in a lot of cases. And so something interesting happened in high school, though, that I actually didn't really put into full perspective until about, I want to say it was 3 years ago. So throughout high school, like I mentioned, I almost every single day at school, I eat lunch by myself. Nobody wanted to eat lunch with me, because if I would try to make friends with someone, they would push me off, or like push my food to where it would splatter on my shirt and my clothes because they didn't want me at their table. I mean, kids were mean, really, really mean. And So there were two people in high school that really have a historical meaning in my life. One is a friend who, the only friend that I've had that we still talk to, that I still talk with him actually on Facebook. And his name is KJ, and we stayed in touch because he's truly an amazing human being. And but I haven't seen him for a long time. And the other one was a guy by the name of Jason. Now, this guy was very quiet on most days, but he would also talk. But he would talk a lot of crazy shit. Now, this was one of the only people that would occasionally sit.
I love the way you said that. Go on. I love it. That's like the comical relief. The crazy shit talking kid in the school. Like, I can relate to this. It's like a perfect, like, television show. Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, well, I watched a lot of Saved by the Bell through high school, too. But that's a different story. Yeah, that's probably one of the only shows I liked. And so Jason talked a lot of crazy shit when he would talk. But he would also be very quiet. Now, Jason eventually kind of faded away through high school. And to put a cap on Jason, 3 years ago, I found out that Jason actually had hooked up with the Saint Lunatics in high school. And Jason became actually the person who had a huge part to play in the Country Grammar, Nelly isn't the rapper.
Yeah.
High school, because
that's crazy.
3 years ago, it really is. 3 years ago, I walked into a local mall because he's here in St. Louis, and I see this tall dude with a very familiar face. Like, the tongues on his shoes are sticking out, but he's probably wearing, I don't know, $50,000 at least of gold chains on him, and you could tell he was real gold, the clothes and stuff. I'm like, holy shit, that's Jason. And everybody was looking at him because they knew who he was. And the expensive-ass Hummer that was sitting outside that was wondering whose it was on the way into the mall, that was his. So long story short, the Jason kid that I met in high school was the Jason who became the executive producer of Nelly and the Saint Lunatics. And that's what he spent his life basically doing after dropping out of high school, which is why I didn't see him after a couple of years, because he dropped out to go and pursue music and hooking up with the Saint Lunatics and Nella, which I thought was pretty cool. So here I am, high school is a blur, and then at the age of 18, something really cool happened that I will never forget. So I was given the opportunity to take the U.S. citizenship test. So to where I could become a U.S. citizen with a U.S. passport and be officially a U.S. citizen. Now, Justin, I will vividly remember this because I was given 100 questions to study. Things like, what do the stars in our flag represent? The red and the white. Who was our first president? What does the Constitution mean? You know, our national anthem, like things that, sadly, I think a lot of Americans don't know.
Yes, true. That was exactly what I was going to say as a commentary. Most Americans don't know the. My ex-wife, she was from Bangladesh. She moved here when she was 4, and she had to do this test, and it was incredible when she would talk about it and all the stuff. And I'm like, most Americans don't know that information about their own country and really take our country for granted because of it. But anyway, go ahead.
So I studied for this test. At the time, I think the cost was like $100, and I had to appear in the Ninth Circuit Court in downtown St. Louis, Missouri, when I turned 18 years old. The Ninth Circuit Court is pretty much, besides the St. Louis Arch, is the tallest building in downtown St. Louis. So here I am, I think it was on the 10th floor, you can see the skyline, and I'm intimidated as hell. You know, I'm 18 years old, I'm like, did I study enough for this? And I was asked 3 questions, Justin, 3 questions out of the 100 that I was studying on this test. And let me tell you this, was probably one of the most surreal experiences I have ever had, surreal in a good way in my life. Because it made me realize that what my father fought for the experience I went through high school, everything preceding up to that, that day, becoming a U.S. citizen happened for a reason. Like I said earlier, God has an impeccable plan for everybody, and God flawlessly executed me becoming a U.S. citizen. I mean, it was just such a surreal time of my life. And one day I'll tell the story to my kids. I haven't yet because they're too young to understand. So I became a U.S. citizen at the age of 18. It was an amazing feeling. And then after barely graduating high school, because I skipped a lot of classes also all through high school because I just couldn't face the bullies. I couldn't sit in class without someone punching me in the back or writing me nasty notes or making fun of me. I just couldn't fathom that. My conscience was tapped out. Luckily enough, they gave me my high school degree, my diploma. They didn't force me to go for a GED because they just, in part, they felt bad for me. So that passed. And after that, you know, all through high school, I was being prepped up for college. Like, you need to go to college. You need to get a higher education, blah, blah, blah. This every single day. And I'm like, I don't understand this. This doesn't make sense to me. So after I got done with high school.
Can I pause you for a second? Ivan, just sorry, because yes. I want to understand, like, what were you interested in? I think a lot of people, when they don't want to go to college, they have lots of other interests. Was there something else you were interested in school? Because I just want to, like, sort of pause for a second. I mean, what were your interests while you were in high school? I mean, it's hard when you're getting bullied and all that, but was there something that really stuck out for you, or something that really did spark your interest, or was it just the feeling of loss because of what was going on?
The feeling of loss was a part of it, but since you asked, you know, because of all the bullying that was happening, so my friend KJ was really the only person that, you know, I talked to all through high school. So I'd get off the school bus, and most times I would get off on the stop at his house, which later on I found out that his parents got divorced and kind of things went sideways there. But I would get off on the stop where he would get off, and we would stay at his house for probably 3 hours after school and just get on America Online. If you remember the days of, like, yeah, the CDs people were selling, and just get into AOL chat rooms or just research the internet. We were just both so curious about technology and the internet. And, like, I knew at that time, like, this is something that I'm going to do with. Like, I don't know what it is right now, but I'm extremely curious about this. Like, you know, it's a new thing. It was the only thing at the time that really I had any kind of interest in, like, building a community. Like, we would get into chat rooms and talk to people. I mean, a lot of times we would make fun and jokes, and but we also meet a lot of cool people that, like, we were like, wow, we could get into a chat room and meet these people. Like, how cool is that? Like, it's a great way to interact and meet new people that you've never met before, that you won't even meet organically, which, let's face it, nowadays, the way we met was on Threads.
And exactly.
You know, 30 years later, what would become the digital revolution, right? And so that was really the only thing all through high school, is that, you know, maxing out the time, which at the time I think it was like 2 hours per CD on America Online. So we would, like, yeah, get a whole bunch of CDs, and we would, like, max it out, and then the next day and the next day and the next day until we got bored. And so that was probably, you know, on the verge of, like, getting out of high school. Like, I knew that I wanted to do something with technology. Like, I was curious in, you know, the way computers worked, the way this thing called the internet and dial-up internet. Like, I was just so, so curious in it. And I didn't even know, like, it was just so new, I couldn't even fathom. I was just curious. I was interested in it. I was drawn to it. And, you know, after high school, I got into a community college, and I dropped less than 2 years in.
Yeah, let me pause you right there, because I want to ask a question around this. So, Like when you were having trouble with school and you didn't really finish, but they gave you the degree anyway. I mean, your parents worked so hard to immigrate to this country. Was that hard on them? Like, what was that like for you? Because I don't know what that's like. It wasn't my story. So what was that like for you? And were your parents supportive? I just can't. I'm trying to wrap my head around this because you ended up going to community college. But I'm like, how was the reaction? I mean, I have to wonder because they obviously wanted you to graduate from school and have opportunity. That's why they came here.
You know, my parents. So this is probably a separate discussion, but my parents had very high expectations of me. You know, they wanted me to graduate high school. They wanted me to graduate college. They wanted me to become better than they ever could be. And that's why, you know, my father worked 12, 13-hour days, 7 days a week while owning a pizza joint because he wanted to make sure that I would have the best opportunities possible. So when I didn't get to walk and I was just given a diploma, it was very disappointing to my parents because they had very high expectations of me. And I'm not going to lie, but probably for a vast majority of my adulthood, I always felt that my parents in some way looked at that as a huge disappointment because they had such high expectations of me. And simply because, you know, my father worked really hard. He wanted to make sure that me and my sister had the best life possible. Yeah, he wanted me to graduate high school because he knew that in doing so, you know, that would pave the way moving forward and hopefully create bigger opportunities for me. So it was kind of disappointing, you know, that it didn't really play out that way. And I used to blame myself for that. In fact, for a very long time, because, of course, later on, you know, my parents kind of made peace with that because they finally understood that I was following a path of my own. And whether they liked it or not, you know, it was, or things were happening for a reason. They just needed to entrust the process. They really tried to sort of micromanage a lot of it. And I think in part because they wanted to ensure that there would be the best result possible for me. So they were afraid. For me, you know, they were cautious for me, they were protective of me, which now as a father I understand why they did what they did, but it was a little disappointing for them that things didn't pan out. And then after I dropped out of, you know, community college, that was even more disappointing to them because I honestly was bored in school. I wasn't learning anything. You know, I chose the internet. I started learning how to program. I started learning it. This was at, you know, 19, 20 years old. I was working a couple of full-time jobs. I did school. I was bored. I would fall asleep. There was nothing interesting in it. And, you know, I started learning skills that I was led to believe were skills for tomorrow that nobody was talking about, which was the internet. I understood that at 19, 20 years old, that the internet was going to be the next best thing to slice bread. And I just needed to figure it out because there was nobody out there that would teach me that. So I self-taught myself how to code at the time in HTML, PHP, how to use platforms like GeoCities. When MySpace came around also, I learned about MySpace and social media, and I was very active in that space. So much that after working two full-time jobs and almost every weekend partying like literally a bachelor and spending crazy-ass money on drinking, smoking, getting high, you know, and hanging around with people who had absolutely no direction in life, I ended up getting my first job as an internet marketer. It was a whopping $15,000 per year salary, and I still lived at home. But what I knew is that I was given an opportunity on just a 100% chance. I had no prior experience, nothing. I was just given an opportunity to learn how to work with small businesses, build websites. When Google came around, learning about Google Ads and eventually managing multi-million dollar campaigns and how to write as a copywriter, you know, how to use social media. And at the time, this was for a company called WSI, World Sites International, which was based out of Canada. I think they're still around. And it was for a local franchisee that gave me an opportunity. And the reason the guy gave me an opportunity is because he was the former general manager of Pizza Hut, and he had just bought into this franchise, and he saw massive potential in me. So from there, you know, things skyrocketed. I mean, my next gig was managing almost $2 million in media spend for a billion-dollar real estate company here in St. Louis. They owned a lot of commercial and residential property, and they needed someone to manage almost $2 million in paid media advertising, and they had nobody. Literally, I was the only internet marketer in a sea of 40 accountants at the time. And so you can imagine how frustrating that was. So, of course, the gig only lasted a year because it was borderline going up a hill without a paddle, so to speak. Mentality, because my only direct report was actually the owner of the company, who the only thing he cared about is, are we making more money in this? Didn't understand anything. And so from there on, I really climbed up, and a lot of cool things started happening. I got involved in social media and digital. I got into the agency world, which I spent 10 years in. And really, in the course of what happened during this time, is I have always been innovative, you know. So innovative that way before people were taking, you know, videos and photos of them, I was that crazy kid who was doing that. And everybody else thought that I was crazy, and learning coding languages.
I know, me too. And advertising on Facebook, everyone made fun of me, like, what are you doing? And like, I'm like, oh, you have no idea. This is the future. You know, this is the future. But I got made fun of and bullied for that stuff. And people are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, okay, obviously the success over the last 12 years of building this food company, no one's recognizing. But then I used advertising and Facebook to help advertise for restaurant equipment sales and stuff like that. But I agree with you. Everyone, what's now standard practice, like, oh, why aren't you doing a reel of yourself, used to be made fun of by people, like, significantly. Yeah. I want everyone to know this. Like, 14 years ago, people really ridiculed you for doing this stuff. Really? Yep. It was crazy. I had thick skin, thank goodness, now even thicker skin. But I just wanted to drop that and anchor that, Ivan, for you, because I think it's hugely important. Anyway, go ahead, continue to tell your story.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's... So what had happened is I spent 10 years or so in the agency world, basically helping several mom and pops go from zero to 15, 20, $25 million companies. And what I later realized is that I was at the epicenter. I was a core component of helping them grow, because I had a very innovative and a disruptive way, in a very creative way, of how I helped them utilize digital and social way before a lot of companies did, and how they did it for the companies they worked for, or their clients, I should say. And even so much that, you know, when I was on Twitter, which I think I joined Twitter like 2009, which is technically, you know, ages ago at this point.
Me too, man. Me too. I never could figure out Twitter. I never was very good at it, but you know, the other ones I excelled at, but go on. I know exactly what you're talking about. Feels like ages ago.
I know, and I think Facebook was like 2007, which is like even an eternity at this point.
Yeah, but I was fortunate that I joined right at 2003. I really jumped into Facebook right away, or 2004, whenever it came out, to whatever, and I still had my college email so I could get in, because back in the day, Facebook, you needed to be a college student and have a college email to join it. And anyway, go ahead, Ivan. Sorry, I love this. This is bringing me back to the day, like, big time.
And it's, you know, from there on, it just, so I was on Twitter, and, you know, one day this gentleman reaches out to me and is like, hey, Ivan, my name is Perry. I am a transplant from NYU here in St. Louis, and I've been tasked to build the a continuing education program, a digital media marketing program at the University of Missouri here in St. Louis. And the reason I was brought in here is because NYU has one of the most innovative digital media marketing programs in the world, and I played a huge part in building that. So he reaches out to me and is like, hey, I'm interested in having you come in and build the curriculum for a search engine optimization, search engine marketing, continuing education course. And mind you, what I had done in the 10 plus years in my agency world, I did a lot of SEO and SEM work in addition to building out my social media repertoire. So here I am, this guy's reaching out to me in a DM, and I'm thinking, what in the hell? I was like, bro, I barely graduated high school and I dropped out of college, but I do have a lot of experience in this. Like, are you sure you have the right guy? And he's like, yeah, man. Like, a lot of people have said that you're the guy for this, and that's why I'm reaching out to you. Like, you're the guy that I want to talk to. And so anyway, here I am. I find myself as the first board member of UMSL Digital, which became a national program later on. This was probably 10 years ago, I would say, 9, 10 years ago. And I'm tasked to build a curriculum for a continuing education course, right? And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, you know? Like, so I'm like researching online. I'm like, all right, here's how you build a curriculum. I was given some direction. Come to find out, this course became the most demanded course as part of the program. And which was great, right? And I did this for 3 years. I would teach once per quarter.
That's hugely impressive, just as a note to everyone. That's an impressive thing to have happen. Anyway, go ahead. I'm going to give you a compliment there and some praise. And I am rooting for you always, obviously. But that's really cool.
Thank you. You know, and at the time, I was trying to absorb it. I mean, there were so many things that happened. I remember the chancellor at the time, this was one instance that really, I think, forged a stronger belief, a self-belief in myself, and really helped me with self-confidence. And that was, so the chancellor at the time was a former CEO of Sprint. And they had this faculty appreciation night. It was at one of the fraternity houses there. And, you know, it was a lot of traditional tenure. So when I say, traditional professors, excuse me, mind you, these are people that have traditional tenure in, you know, different disciplines over the last 20, 30 years. And then he was like us adjunct professors that were brought on, right, as part of this continuing education program. And let me tell you, Justin, like, I remember vividly still to this day, like, I was so intimidated to be a part of this because I didn't think I was qualified. I didn't think I was smart enough. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think I had enough money. I didn't think I was dressed enough. In fact, I tried 3 different sports jackets just to go to this thing. And, like, I went there, and I'm leaning on the door where everybody else is congregated and just kind of observing because I was afraid to take part of networking. And he comes over and says, what's going on, man? And I was like, hey, man, I'm not going to lie to you, but I feel intimidated, you know, to be here. I feel like I shouldn't be here. He looks at me, he's like, why is that? And he's like, and I was like, well, you know, these are all like people with tenure. These are highly educated people, you know, like I don't belong here. And like, he turns around and looks at me, he's like, you have more of a reason to be here than any of these people. And I said, why? And he's like, because what you're bringing to the table, these people have no idea about. He said, the knowledge that you've brought forth to this program, to this course, building as the number one most demanded course, is unlike anything that this entire university has ever done. And I literally wanted to cry, Justin, right then and there. Here I am, a fucking mid-20s. You know, year old, I wanted to cry because I was like, did this guy just tell me this? Like, is this real? Is this happening? And so anyway, I left that program because I was on the borderline of like trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, what I wanted to do. I mean, it was great to get paid $1,500 for a couple of days to teach, but I had bigger goals and bigger dreams. So I passed on the baton onto the next person. At that point, the UMSO Digital board was somewhere in the vicinity of 40 people from different agencies locally and nationally, people with different talents that were brought on to build this continuing education program. Now, being one of the first three, I believe, I might have been number two of forging this thing was like, I'm extremely grateful to this day because, you know, Perry saw something in me that I don't think I even saw in myself. And so from there, I exited. And at the time, so this was 2015, you know, my father at the time. So he sold his pizza business. He got into the flooring industry, into the trades. And, you know, he was doing very well. He was doing about $250,000 gross revenue at that time. And I sat down and said, Dad, you know, give me 12 months and I can help you double revenue with your business. Like, just entrust me. And I know it's a long shot. And he said, okay. He said, you do your thing. I don't know what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, but I'll help support you financially, whatever you need. To keep a long story short, in 1 year, I helped my father's business, which he worked 15 years to get to $250,000 in gross revenue, go from $250,000 to over $500,000 gross revenue in just 12 months. At the time, he had a 6-person crew. They were doing a lot of residential flooring installations like tile and hardwood and primarily in upper scale homes, like $500,000 and above, a few multi-million dollar homes. At one point in time, he did work for the former St. Louis Blues hockey player, Keith Tkachuk. We did some flooring work in his basement. So it was those kinds of cool things. So then I realized, all right, Ivan, you've got this massive entrepreneurial experience, agency side experience, digital and social media marketing experience. It's time to do your own thing. And so in 2016, in May 2016, which actually after I left my father's business, for some reason, I had the scarcity mindset and I took a 6-month job with a local agency. And we were 1 month into my son being born, which is a completely different story because both of my kids are IVF kids also, which God had a different plan for that. And I'm blessed. But basically, I left permanently the last 9-to-5 job that I ever held. So here we are 7 years later. So I started Razor Sharp Digital. I knew I could make an impact on the industry, on the world. And I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I was going all in. I took the severance that I had and basically invested in myself, which at the time was a long shot because my son was 1 month old. You know, I was getting up, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, to help, to feed and all that while my wife was working a full-time job. And I didn't know what I was doing, but somewhere deep inside my heart, I knew that it was going to play out and I just needed to trust myself, trust my intuition, and just keep figuring it out. And so that's when Razor Sharp Digital was officially born. And I knew that the focus behind building a human-centric digital agency was just that, a company that operates on strong ethical principles, core values, and the fact that we're not for everybody. In fact, the lesser clients that I had, the better, which I kind of went back and forth on that, but I knew human centricity was going to be a huge part of how it operates, especially since I spent 10 plus years in the agency world. And let me tell you, seeing some really dark shit, what other people would do for money. And so since then, you know, I focused on my business. I started gathering clients, generating revenue. At one point in time, I thought everybody could be my client, learn a hard lesson there. And then I kind of started shifting towards be selective about who you want to work with. Align with people who have similar interests with you. And something I forgot to mention too, that to this day is still kind of puzzling, is so back in 2010, 2011, I literally got on Walmart.com and bought a $300 bike and decided that I was going to be a cyclist. So to this day,
I've been there.
I invested in a better bike and recently finished a triathlon training and some cool things. But I think cycling has really helped me with a lot of things that has happened. And so that kind of brings us to modern day 2023, Razor Sharp Digital, entrepreneur, father, husband, podcaster.
Yeah. This is an incredible story. So I'm going to ask some questions here because I just want to fill in some blanks here. During this time, I mean, you have, it's hard, right? You have a lot of lows going on and there's a lot of highs as well. I want to go back a little bit to high school, maybe middle school, maybe college. Like, did you have any like positive role models in your life? Were there people that were inspiring you to keep going? Was there anyone out there that were sort of living by core values for you that kept you from not from doing something bad to yourself, or for lack of a better term, not being more aggressive with the bullies? Because I think so many kids rise to extreme violence against bullies that there's other ways to handle it. I get the reaction, but I also understand that there's ways and living a good life and living and proving ourselves later on and living a better life than they ever could now than then. Because I'm one of those, I'll prove it to you. At least I used to proving myself, and proving myself to everyone used to be a big thing for me. It's not anymore that I really concreted my identity. But talk to me a little bit about that. Were there any positive influences? I mean, I know about teachers and parents and stuff like that, but was there anyone out there that sort of gave you a glimmer of hope?
The only two people I can think of is probably my parents. And largely because, one, I saw my father just being so resilient in everything, you know, working three full-time jobs over the course of 3 years while we were going through the immigration process. Then also working long hours for several years at the pizza joint, because he wanted to make sure that we didn't struggle. You know, when he purchased our first house in 1996, I mean, my father, and now that you ask this question, there's still moments in my life now at age 43 that I wonder if I've really expressed that level of gratitude towards my father, or what he did and why he did it solely for his family. So it was him, and then my mom. I mean, man, seeing a mother take care of two kids by herself for 3 years, it teaches you a lot of things. There was nobody there. She had to figure it out. And so to this day, you know, now my parents are, in fact, my parents are in Europe right now, ironically enough. They just left this week. And seeing them at the age of 66 and 63, fulfilling goals and dreams that most people think, you know, are crazy. I don't have a word for that. Fulfillment just doesn't do justice. Happiness doesn't do justice. It's much bigger than that. And so they were really the two people that I think all of my life I've looked up to, because my dad figured out a lot of stuff. My mom figured out a lot of stuff. And after going through a lot of different things, a lot of downs, you know, after just finishing a 19-week triathlon training, which is the most intense thing I've ever done, it has really taught me about how resilient as a person I really am, and how afraid I think I've been for 90% of my life. Not because I was incapable, it was because I was unwilling to unleash the beast inside of me. And I still want to say to this day that it's probably about 5% of in me that still hasn't fully unleashed that beast, because what I did physically and mentally over the last 19 weeks at the age of 43 is what most 15-year-olds can't even do. So physically. And so my
father, I'm right there with you, dude. I love this.
Yeah, my father and my mom are, and now, of course, my wife. I forgot to mention that, you know, I'm married for a second time, and my first wife, who I knew for 7 years total, was a complete narcissist. So that didn't add to, you know, waking up every day and being told that you're a failure, literally every single freaking day.
Yeah.
You're a failure. Your ideas are stupid. You're not going to amount to anything. Screw you, man. You're stupid. Like, I can go on and on and on and on. And so anyway, it's probably my parents. They've been, I think now as they've gotten older, they understand more of why I do what I do. And I think they're starting to understand that I'm striving for generational wealth and what that really means in context, because, you know, I think to some extent they're close to achieving that themselves. And the fact that they're nearly there, they're starting to realize the meaning of that and how that's going to pave the future of, well, for me, my sister, my kids, and hopefully their kids for generations to come. And so it's them too. It's, you know, I hate to separate my father and my mother, but, you know, they've both played equally a very important role in my life, probably more so than, you know, when Mother's Day rolls around or my mom's birthday, I'm like, all right, don't be a terrible son, man. They've been so supportive to you. And there's been a lot of times where they didn't understand. It's because, like, being bullied through high school, they didn't understand. They were incoherent. They didn't know how to react. And some part of me used to blame them for that. Like, why don't my parents understand? You know, I'm counting on them. Why didn't they understand? Why didn't they do something? And only to realize that they just didn't know how, you know. And you can't blame someone for incoherence. You can try to educate them. And if they try to understand and take initiative, only then you find that peace. And I think that's where I was stuck, is just that in some part, especially through high school, I would blame my parents. I'm like, why in the hell my parents are not supporting me in this? Because they didn't know how. I mean, they supported me, but they didn't know what to do. They felt helpless. You know, they would give me comfort and support, which was great. That definitely helped. I think if it wasn't for that, I don't know if I'd be alive today, honestly. It's so ironic that now, I mean, this is probably the first, like I said in the beginning, this is the first time in a very long time that I can at least remember, it probably ever, that I think I've really told my full story, which is why I mentioned earlier on that I've had several people say, Ivan, you need to write a book, man. You've got a fascinating story. And I think the world needs to hear it. There's a lot of people out there, but I think a huge part of where I am and I think where I will go is largely my parents. And if there's one thing that, you know, I dread, this is a tough one. If there's one thing that I dread the most, is the day that they won't be here.
I agree with you.
So it's there's so much that I think can be unpacked about that, because we're only given a certain time to live, you know, on this planet. And I think as I get older, now I realize, like, how much more I want to do, how much more I can do. As an entrepreneur, as a husband, as a father, as a human being. And which is why, you know, several people have asked me, like, you know, why do you do what you do? You know, not just on the business side, like what's your greatest inspiration, right? And it's impact. Sure, I want to leave a legacy in this world, but for me, it's impact, because servitude to the world, to people, to businesses, which I found later on that my best clients have actually become some of my really good friends. So some of the best human beings that I think I've ever met, which, let's face it, we need to have more good human beings out there. And so to answer your question, it's probably, well, not probably, it's both of my parents. You know, they've encountered their level of, you know, repercussions and you know, backlashes and hatred, because a lot of people just didn't believe in them. And, you know, now me going through a lot of things that I've gone through, it makes me realize that, you know what, if my parents could do it and figure it out, I mean, just to give you context, you know, I think my dad just dropped $50,000 on a house renovation. He just bought my mom a brand new vehicle. And when I said a brand new vehicle, probably the vicinity of $80,000-$90,000 car. They just flew out to Europe for 4 weeks, which they now do on an annual basis. Last year, over Christmas break, was the first time that our entire family got together at a beach house in Destin, Florida, and not just in Destin, Florida, but in Seaside, in one of the most prominent communities in the nation. And I think that cost like $15,000 for 7 days, and my dad just paid for it like it was nothing. And so monetary means nothing, but the experiences that were created are priceless. And when I look at what my parents have done, I tell myself, Ivan, you got this, man, you know, and you can always do more. So chase your goals and dreams relentlessly. If your parents could accomplish the wildest thing that most people never thought were possible, or they never even thought were possible, then you can definitely do this. So
this is incredible. And what I'm going to ask Ivan and the audience as well, so they can hear it, is I'm going to ask you to do another episode for sure. Sorry, Ivan. I don't know. My phone goes in and out a little bit here since you're plugged into the soundboard. But I'm going to ask if we could do continue on to another episode, because I think we need a whole episode to talk about just the digital marketing, the advertising, all that. And I think if you write a book, it has to be a digital book for sure, pun intended. And but I was wondering, you know, as we sort of give the audience, we've given them a full episode here, would you mind doing another episode in a part two, just based on what actually all of your experience, all the SEO stuff, sort of being able to drop those nuggets of information to the audience? Because I think this episode in and of itself, which I'll probably end up breaking into two parts also, just because there's so much knowledge. Like I didn't imagine that your story was going to be like that, but I think outside of your professional experience, your personal life experience could help millions of people. Just from my own coaching, from my own helping individuals out there, it's kind of incredible. Like, I will always point them to this story because the struggles that you made. Would that be okay with you? We broke this into another episode?
That would be an absolute honor, Justin. Absolutely.
Because I do want to focus on the professional stuff and the entrepreneur stuff, but I think that all entrepreneurs have a very strong struggle and foundation of facing adversity in order to become good entrepreneurs. So it's why I ask these questions, because everyone always jumps into the entrepreneurial business side, but most don't understand behind every great athlete, behind every great human, behind every great entrepreneur and rising entrepreneur is a struggle of adversity, where they learn to have thicker skin, where they learn to get knocked down or were knocked down and learn to constantly get back up. And so I just want to anchor that. So of this episode, I want to ask this question before we move on as my last question. Like, throughout the years and building and trying to figure out who you were going to be and get to this point where you're a successful entrepreneur, you're a successful human, where you've built a life where you're now talking out against bullies, you have your own podcast. What are the core values? If you would look back, what are the core values that sort of are inside of you, your morals and ethics that sort of built your integrity and character, if I were to word it differently, like that essentially made you who you are, that your parents maybe instilled in you? Because you mentioned about your parents being your role models. I just want to leave the audience with this as we end this episode and prepare for the next one. What are the things that really make Ivan who he is? I get the personality stuff, like you're a triathlete now, you're an athlete, you're an intelligent person, you're a marketer, you're an advertiser, you're in the digital space, you're a coder, all of those things that make up your personality. But who is it that actually makes up the principles? What are the principles that actually make up Ivan?
You know, it's, first of all, thank you for this question. This is probably one of the best questions. And here's why, is because, so on the business side, it took me 4 years to actually put together what I call the 10 commandments that I believe, AKA core values, to separate me from the rest of the digital herd. And I think it took me 4 years is because there was so much there, and I'll share those in just a second. But also, I sort of had this internal battle of determining how is my business different than me, and then realizing that it's an extension of me. And which is why these 10 commandments, these core values I'm about to share, are what they are. So the first one is disruption, and these are in no particular order. The second one is impact. The third one is people. The fourth one is integrity. The fifth one is deliverability. The sixth one is being yourself. The seventh one is accountability. The eighth one is consistency. And the ninth one is competition. And the tenth one is empathy. And so it's so ironic because I literally started a note on Evernote a little over 4 years ago. I'm actually checking my phone when I knew that I wanted to develop core values. And you know, these core values are literally me. That's who I am. I've always been disruptive, and I've been bullied and criticized for that. I've always wanted to create an impact on the world, on the industry, on business, on digital, on social. You know, first and foremost, I care about people. That's it. In business, you connect with people. You serve other people. I don't care if it's B2B or B2C. You serve people. You connect with people. Integrity, I mean, you know, be honest, be transparent. The truth will set you free. You know, deliverability, do what you're going to say you're going to do. Or why accountability is another one is take full responsibility. You know, we all make mistakes, you know, and if we fall short, it's important because, you know, deliverability is actually an interesting one because in my agency days, man, did I see a lot of crap being swept under the rug. Being yourself, self-expression, you know, I don't, on the business side, you know, come as you are. I don't want to change you. I want to help you become a better person. And this is for team members. This is for employees. This is for myself. Accountability, which I mentioned, you know, it's, we're all going to make mistakes. I make mistakes every single day, in business, in life, in parenting. Consistency. I will tell you this. I will fail 99,000 times, but I will never fail to be consistent. There's a difference between failing and quitting. And so I've learned that the hard way. Competition. I'm probably one of the most competitive people out there. I mean, give me a good challenge. I might fail at it, but you know what? I won't quit it. And so I'm very competitive. So competition is really important. Empathy. You know, there's just not enough to say about that. Just really being able to empathize with other people and other businesses, which is why on the business side specifically, I spend a lot of time educating as part of my approach, because I think it's important to understand, share value, and empathize with individual situations that businesses have, because you probably know most businesses and most individuals, we all have unique situations, right? And so, you know, it's taken me 4 years, in fact, and this is probably for part two of our story, that which is why our new website has taken so long to build this, because, you know, core values, mission statements, really just really redefining the perception of who we are. That's really an extension of who I am as a person. You know, I was reading something that Bill Gates had said, of these are more like regrets of what he wishes he would have done, you know, when he started Microsoft, you know, way, way, way back. And I kept hearing a lot of how much he wanted to infuse of himself and his true character and personality into the business, which would have probably yielded into, you know, Microsoft becoming an even bigger entity than what it is today, because he stayed true to who he is as a person. So these 10 commandments, these core values that you asked about, are also applicable on the business side, but they are who I am as a person.
I love this. How perfect, because they are exactly who you are and who you become based on your story. I think they're a reflection of the lenses, if we were to look through your lenses of your past, to get to where you are now at 43 years old. They are these things, right? They're the things that got you to where you are. And even though you weren't necessarily wanting to finish college or high school or able to walk, you still got your degree. And even though you didn't necessarily go to college, you found a path that you excelled at, you know? And I think it shows in all those things. And I think from the bullying standpoint and now speaking up against it and the vulnerability, we can see the integrity in your care for humans or people, as you put it. And, you know, I think the impact and the disruption is a good thing, not to be confused with disrupting when I'm in momentum, but disruption in creating new pathways for humans to succeed at or create jobs or new dreams that that come into our lives. So, Ivan, I appreciate you coming on the show. I will send you some dates and some time so we can plan part. I guess it'll actually be part three, because I'm going to divide this into two parts, because you have so many nuggets in there that I'm just like blown away at. I can't wait to re-listen to this episode. And where can they find you online? Where can they find you on Instagram and Threads or anywhere else you are on social media? And where can they find your business?
First of all, thank you so much, Justin. This has been, it has really been an amazing conversation. I want to thank you for asking all the right questions and giving me the opportunity to share a lot of things that I don't know if I've ever shared or I haven't shared in a very long time. In terms of online to connect, I'm very active on just about every social platform, either under at Ivan Tamokov or Ivan underscore Tamokov. I think my Twitter handle might just have an underscore because someone else has that name. You know, so Instagram, very active. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter, obviously on Threads, on Facebook. Feel free to send me a friend request. I love meeting new people. And then my company's website is razorsharpdigital.com, and we are also pretty much on all the socials, all the major socials, as well. And like I said, that is actually a website that is at least 5 years old, and I'm actually getting very excited about our new website, which has taken nearly 2 years to develop because of all the details and how peculiar, which is a good and bad thing, I've been about it, ensuring that we really show people what we've done and what we're capable of doing, so they can get a full picture. But once again, thank you so much, and thank you for asking for a part two. I'm looking forward to anyone who's listening to this. If at the very least I can help give some insight or advice or help you in any way, or if you just need someone to talk to, someone to listen, I'm always on the socials.
Yeah, and you help me. You and I talked on Threads, and we've talked even we were gabbing away at like a half hour before we even got started recording, just talking back and forth. You've been a huge help to me, and God really speaks through other people. I believe that. And, you know, God puts us on a path and has a plan. And for me, like, the best skill that I have is networking with other people, and I think, like, helping them tell their story so other people can benefit, because I understand the importance of my story can only help so many people, but other people's, and being a facilitator of other people's stories, can help millions, if not billions, okay? And that's sort of my perspective. But one of the things I would say is I appreciate you really taking the time to tell your story. It was hugely impactful, and you made a difference on me today. I know that if you only affect one person, that's a really great thing. And you definitely impacted me and influenced me and reminded me of a lot of things that I needed to be reminded of in my life. And I greatly appreciate your time, Ivan, and the 2 hours we've spent together today conversating and recording this episode. And I am rooting for you. I really hope that you take on the bullying thing and really start to speak out about it and help other kids and individuals, immigrants or not. There's a lot of different groups do it, but I do know that in particular, a lot of immigrant groups that come into new countries, no different than when I went over to Italy at 13 and was called Sabaro instead of Bizarro because they called me fake pizza because I was a fake Italian, and the ridicule that would surmount around that. But I understand it from that perspective, and I saw it around me, and I saw it with friends that were not from the United States as they came into the United States and tried to grow, because I grew up in D.C. and went to a very multicultural school called The Heights. If anyone just saw my recent Instagram post, I talk about The Heights. And in that picture, you'll actually see there's Willie, who's American, but then there's Pierre, who's Egyptian, and Human, who's originally from Iran. And so I went to a very diverse school and diverse situation. And when we would go outside of that school or outside of our environment, there was a lot of making fun of. There was a lot of degrading and belittling based on anything humans can find. Humans will find anything that you're insecure about and bully you for it and put you down for it. And that's part of life. But I think that your ability to talk about it from your experience and give other people hope is huge. And I'm glad that you opened up about that today. So I'm rooting for you big time. You got a cheerleader here. You know, I don't use pom-poms and I don't wear a skirt. But I do, I am very masculine. But I am rooting for you. So I appreciate your time. You, like I said, you moved me big time. And I look forward to our next part, and I look forward to talking to you again. So thank you, Ivan. Thank you for the audience. Please share this episode. Give it 5 stars. It helps the entrepreneurs who are on there get the message out, like I said, and impact humans. The more you guys participate in the episode, the comments, the 5 stars, the better off, the more they spread, the more people hear about them, the more you just use word of mouth and connect people to this podcast or this episode, the better they do. That's part of it. Ivan, we'll probably talk all about, you know, this marketing and how to do all of that in the next episode for sure. But thank you guys for listening in. You can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, again, BIZZARRO. You can find this show and all the shows we do on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And we're out.